It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
We're not checking levels because we always check levels and we never change anything. So we're just doing it and we're running late as is. So.
Yeah.
Hello, everybody. I apologize for us being a little late, as you may have noticed. We had some computer troubles, and it was bad, and now we're better. So, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that has appeared on not less than 63 episodes of The Simpsons. I'm Tony.
Not more than either, huh?
63 to this date.
And I'm William, and this
people
is...
People could listen later, and it could be more.
This is, of our podcast, this is episode
135. And hold on just a second.
What are you doing?
Stuck to my foot. Yeah,
there's
annoying.
There's a bag stuck to your foot.
Bag stuck to my foot. It's better now. All right. Now, because I forgot it the last time, we're going to explain for people who are brand new listening, episode 135, weird choice. But... basically, the way this works, we have a hat. It's magical. It has its own email address. That email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Once again, that email address is themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. People, not unlike yourselves, but very unlike William, write emails to the hat with questions, comments, topics, things like that. They keep them short because it makes me happy. And then the hat magically transmogrifies those emails all on its own into little cards with the emails written on them inside of itself. And we draw them out at random, read them to you, and talk about them till we're bored. That's the whole show.
It's pretty nifty how it works, really.
Yeah, it's fancy. It's exciting. It's, you know, it's gone about as far as it can go. Not unlike Kansas City.
What do you mean?
That's the reference. Everything's up to date in Kansas City. They've gone about as far as they can go. You never get my references because you live in a shoe.
No, not a shoe. Maybe a jar,
or you live
or a bottle
in a jar,
or a jug, or a shoebox. Maybe shoebox. Not
there
a shoe.
We go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard it here first. Apparently, William lives in a shoebox, and he only just realized. Had to think about it for a while.
Yep, I'm not even aware of where I live.
Can't tell the difference without some serious thought between a shoe, a bottle, a jar,
a jug,
and a shoebox.
Yeah, shoebox. Definitely a shoebox. Well, I'm glad we've got that figured out.
So, William.
What?
How was your week?
Oh, my week. Let's see. Well, it's a recorded second episode of Grapevine.
So wait, so there's two episodes of Grapevine and two episodes of Screenshots.
Well, that's tonight. We're going to record
episode three.
Oh, that's right. Tonight is episode three of
Tell
Screenshots.
Tell us, what is tonight's topic?
Tonight's topic on Screenshots is Man of Steel, which is odd because as sort of one of our little production rules is we don't talk about films we're going to avoid talking about films until they're released on DVD or Blu-ray.
Yes.
For various reasons. First of all, you know, since we're going to talk thoroughly about the film and not worry about spoilers.
You want to give people time.
Time. Yeah. Not just to see the film in the theaters, obviously, but if they want to buy it or rent it and watch it first. And sometimes we don't want to see the film in the theater, so we're going to watch it on DVD or something first. And just a variety of reasons, but Man of Steel keeps coming up in some of our other conversations, and we just can't.
Just want to have it out.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about Man of Steel.
Don't forget now. A healthy dose of Superman Returns.
I don't know if we're going to talk
about Superman Returns. Like the very first Superman movie, both involve villain Lex Luthor doing something apocalyptic in order to get real estate.
Yes, I know that. And actually, I thought Brandon Roth did a pretty good job.
Brandon Roche. Roche, I believe. Roche.
Okay, whatever. He did a pretty good job channeling
my trainer,
the late, great Christopher Reeve.
My trainer at the phone sales job that I had for 4 weeks before I walked out is dear, dear friend. Grew up with him and is dear, dear friends with him and was in his wedding.
Well, yeah, he's from Iowa. He's yes. from Norwalk.
And no, he also played Norway. A super vegan in Scott Pilgrim vs. the World, what, although I haven't seen it.
What is that town south of Des Moines? Norway. Norwalk?
Norway is a little ways.
I can't believe I don't remember. I mean, that's my neck of the woods, and I'm forgetting what town that is. That's embarrassing. Anyway, so that's what we're going to do
You've
tonight.
I've always been suspicious of neighbors.
And yeah, a second episode of Grapevine is about conspiracy theories. It's kind of interesting. Kind of interesting. And let's see. You know, I've been working on the Briar Rose script. I've been adding a few things about characters, getting some character development, and developing some relationships, because I do anticipate that I might write more. I don't know if I'm going to or not, but I'm realizing that if I do, I want a lot more stuff in the first one to kind of, you know, set up the ones that come later. So I'm working some of that stuff in.
You've got a lot of stuff in the first one.
Yeah, I know. That I'm
it's
so
a lot of stuff.
I'm a little worried about the extra stuff I'm putting in there, but I think it'll work. I've actually talked to the characters or the actors whose characters I'm tweaking, and they seem to like the changes.
You've got a talking sausage. You've got several witches. You have 8 dwarves. You have 3...
Not stealthy. Stealthy is not
3
one of them.
Guards.
Recurring roles.
Yes.
Let's see. I've also been working a lot on my other larger project, which is frustrating because, you know what? I love working on it. I love just spending a whole day, you know, doing the whole world-building thing and all that stuff. It's such... So enjoyable. But it kind of stops being fun the second I realize I don't have anything to do with this thing. I mean, I don't know how I'm ever going to produce it. I don't know how I'm ever going to get it out there. I mean, I've got a lot of ideas of how to produce it, and I'm not particular, you know, in terms of it being a, you know, like a comic book or a web comic or a web series or something. I mean, those are the visual options that I prefer. Because the more I think about it, the more I would just love it to be a visual thing. But I go back and forth with it being something visual or something that would be like a radio play, because it also is really well suited for that. Although I think a lot like Buck Rogers, I think one of the reasons Buck Rogers worked so well as a radio play was because it was also a comic strip. So it was sort of helped on the visual side with that thing being out there. So maybe I can find some way to do both of those things, but I need an illustrator if I'm going to, so, you know.
But you know lots of people.
I realize that, but you know, like I say, I love working on it, and I love thinking about how cool it's going to be once I get some episodes written, but then I worry about how it might not ever get made into anything. It worries me.
I have that difficulty. I have frequently had that difficulty in the past as a game master. Because I get ideas and I'm like, oh, and this is going to be so awesome. But how do I actually execute it? And first of all, I never seem to do that right. And second of all, it's never as cool in actuality as it was in my mind. But you learn to adjust.
You know,
At a certain point, you're going to stop messing with it for a while and start messing with getting it made.
I hope so. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I hope that happens. That's most, I mean, you know, I'm always just working. That's really all I ever do. I've been trying to, there have been some TV shows I've been keeping up on because we might talk about them on the podcast tonight.
Yeah.
Like Sleepy Hollow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
And I'm behind on both of those because the producer's not here.
And I actually went ahead and watched the last couple episodes of Once Upon a Time just for the heck of it.
Not Once Upon a Time in Wonderland.
That starts tonight, doesn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know if I'm even going to try
so
that.
Far.
Supernatural is another show. We've watched Supernatural since the beginning, and that's one of the reasons we watched that.
I'm very envious of that because it's too big now for me to attempt it. And I think it would be kind of cool, but it's too large. But to be fair,
I think you'd like it, actually.
We did Stargate SG-1 from the beginning, and that was 10 seasons. But it's a lot of work.
I've been thinking about watching that. Just SG-1. Recently, I've been thinking about it. Let's see. Not very much else to report. You know, though, when I went back home, there were some things I was going to talk about that, because... did I ever tell you there's a spring on my farm?
Like a metal coil?
No, a spring, like water coming out of the ground, coming out of the rock.
You did not.
Well, there is.
My dad's, and you're going to bottle it and property, well, make money?
No. I just wanted to excavate it, basically, so that, you know, it could be exposed. And actually, the spring comes out in a place in the timber there that's clearing. And I don't know why that's true. I don't know why there's nothing growing there except a little bit of grass, but...
Because the water is poison.
Well, whatever the reason, it's kind of pretty there. So it's nice to visit, and the spring is really cool. And so I went to see how the spring was doing. And when I said excavate it, the reason that has to be excavated is because for some reason, soil, you know, it's the bottom of the hill, and soil covers it over. And it looked like that was happening again, and I'm not sure how we're ever going to clear that soil away so that it doesn't keep covering it up. But
rocks.
But as we were walking back, we
had, like, a circle of stones. Seriously.
Well, yeah.
Just like a tiny retaining wall, basically.
Yeah, I suppose. But you know what I can understand is there's lots of trees around there. I don't know why it's not holding back the dirt.
Hooligans.
Whatever.
Youths.
But when we left... We had to walk through the corn, which was really interesting. I haven't done that in years. But it made me think about when I was a kid. We used
Did you have the urge to yell out, "I have your woman, Outlander"?
No.
Come on, you know you did.
No. It made me think of when I was a kid. Cause
did anyone say, if you build it, they will come?
No. When we were kids, we used to we used to make sandwiches and pack a lunch, and we put them in these, like, handkerchiefs, you know?
Oh, God.
And tied the handkerchiefs up to a stick and slung them on our shoulders like we were hobos. And we'd go out across the field into the timber, and we'd be gone all day long in the woods. And
you really were just Opie, weren't you?
It was great. It was really fun, you know, just exploring the timber. And
is there your dad Andy Griffith?
No. There was a pond back in a man-made pond, you know. Because you made ponds by putting up earth berms, you know, but the berm had broken. And
earth
so,
berms! And so, and
so if there was enough
earth berms.
If there was enough rain, you could get the pond a little bit full, but it was flowing out, and there was this gully, and, you know, there were turtles and frogs, and I mean, I could go on and on about how awesome it was just to explore
obviously.
The woods and the little creeks and streams and stuff. And I just was thinking about that while we were walking around and thinking how great that was growing up and how much I missed it and how awesome it was to kind of do it again. But walking through the corn was, you know, the corn is really mature right now. So the leaves aren't that sharp, but they still cut while you're going through there. And yet somehow you don't really mind. It's just fun doing it. I don't know. It was really great. But, that was a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I'm going to get back before Thanksgiving. I'd kind of like to, because when the leaves change out there, it's really nice. And I haven't been back for the leaves changing for many years, because usually I go back for my sister's birthday.
It should
birthday.
Be happening about now.
Yeah. I usually go back for my sister's birthday end of September, right? But then I won't go back until, like, Thanksgiving in November, so I miss everything, usually. So maybe I'll find an excuse to go back, you know, sometime this month still. But yeah, I don't have anything else really to report. And you've got a lot to talk about, I imagine, because Trisha's been gone and you've been misbehaving probably like you usually do when she leaves.
I love that. No, I haven't got much to say because I haven't done much. Yep, the producer.
Not like we didn't get together to work on the web series or anything while she's gone.
The producer left Sunday afternoon, and I still went to the gym and did my killer workout. And then since then, there has been very little going on. I have been fighting some sort of sniffly thing for like 2 weeks, and I thought it was allergies, but now I'm taking allergy meds, and it doesn't seem to be helping, so I don't know what's going on with that. And then I was having some stomach troubles that I think are related to my meds. It happens every once in a while when you're on metformin. And it got bad enough on Tuesday that I came home sick after a couple hours. So I didn't have gaming this week, so we haven't had gaming in a long time. And I've been playing a ton of Assassin's Creed 3. And that's sort of been it. It has not been that interesting. I did learn a fun fact yesterday. I tweeted shortly before this, in fact, about it. At Subway, the restaurant, if you say audibly the word perfect, they are apparently required to, first off, ring a bell, and second, mock you. I encountered it 3 times while I was there. Once me, because I said perfect the first time.
You're making this up.
No. That's what you said about Cookie Clicker. No, I said...
This doesn't even make any sense. For one thing, why the word perfect? And second of all, why would they mock a customer? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, I believe they don't consider it mocking. But what do you consider the definition of mocking?
The definition of mocking?
Yes.
Well, very technically, it's when you sort of... not so much impersonate, but you make fun of the person or ridicule the person by sort of reflecting back to them how ridiculous they look or sound.
This is what happens. I say perfect. They ring the bell. All the employees go perfect. And that's it. And they do it in unison together and then like pretend like nothing happened. There's a little bell, like one of the ring for hotel service kind of bells, sitting on there. Didn't even notice it until he said, "Is that enough mayo on the sandwich?" And I said, "Perfect." And he hit the bell, and they all went, "Perfect!" And then they went about their business. And then somebody else later, I didn't even hear them say it, but then I heard them ring the bell, and they said, "Perfect!"
So they weren't really mocking you.
Technically.
No, they were celebrating the perfection that you pointed out. You said perfect, and they were like, "Oh wow, he said perfect. We got something perfect. Ring the bell, celebrate that, everyone together.
Anyway,
be happy about perfection."
I believe nobody enjoyed the experience, and I believe it is forced upon them by their corporate masters.
What if it was like Pee-wee's Playhouse, and it was just the secret word that day?
Perfect is the secret word,
and so it's whatever.
I would have loved it if they screamed real loud. That would have been fun. It's at the secret word. Perfect. Oh, I would have loved that.
But it was so routine. It seemed like it was a word that.
No, and I've seen it. They had that look in their eye, like the damn Coldstone people have when they have to sing a goddamn song when they get a tip.
They have to sing a song when they get a tip.
Yes, at least that used to be the process. In fact, to this day, I desperately want to know how the song We Got a Dollar goes. because it used to be that they had specific songs. And one of them, if you tipped a dollar, was We Got a Dollar. And I tipped a dollar, and nobody could remember the song. And when I go back now, none of them even remembers it existed. So I'm going to live my life not knowing how the song We Got a Dollar went.
See, here's... You know, it always bothers me when some business that obviously has a very particular kind of way of doing things and a sort of a quirky way of doing things in its original location.
Yeah.
Then it starts to franchise and everyone's got to do this.
Yep.
It doesn't work.
That's the thing. You can tell when it's fake.
Well, right. And
you can tell when it's made up and forced upon
there's
people.
A reason it works where it started. And it won't necessarily work anywhere else. And the notion that you can just, even the notion that you can take the original Starbucks and reproduce it everywhere and have it all be the same is stupid and ridiculous.
Yes.
And
in most cases, when it's something that really takes off like that, the original location was full of very particular people who really loved what they do and put their heart into it. Most places, because we're talking about places that are frequently food service or cheap retail or something like that. And most of those places, when they become a huge chain, are staffed a not insignificant percentage with teenagers who would really rather be doing anything else.
Right. They're not coming to work here because they know the original location and they want to work for that place. They're there because they need a job and they're going to make minimum wage.
Exactly. And so the enthusiasm is not there and it's fake.
Well, the culture isn't there. And there's no reason to think it would be or should be. Anyone who looks at a place like that and says, by golly, we should market this to the rest of the country is being an idiot.
Yes.
But sadly, they go ahead and do that, and they do make a lot of money, and they think it worked, when really it was just ridiculous and annoying.
I think it ends up having a weird sort of reality TV appeal. People sort of point and laugh. Or the stupid people are like, oh, look, it's so good. Because I'm sure some people can't tell. People are dumb.
Well, maybe they don't want to tell. Maybe they want to feel like they're experiencing it just like they would if they were flying to Seattle.
And this
or flying
thing at Subway
wherever
was greeted every time by just uncomfortable silence for the entire room, which was packed, by the way, because it was lunch hour at Subway. So it was like, perfect. Ding! Perfect!
Well, see, that's another
thing. And
then
I heard the crickets. And then everybody would finally get back to business.
That's another thing. There are a lot of regional differences. You know, something that works on the West Coast or on the East Coast or in the Deep South might not work in the Midwest.
Yep. Yep.
These are real regional differences where people are really different for real reasons that you can point to historically how these particular cultures evolved. And in Iowa in particular, well, in the Midwest in particular, I think, but I suppose Iowa more particularly, most of the people who have moved here when Iowa first opened up, and even in the sort of the second wave in the 1840s and 50s, are like, you know, English and German pietists who are like, you know, pretty humorless.
Yes.
They're not used to surprises, not really used to things being silly or crazy, you know, so... You go into a place like that and they do something silly and everyone's standing around wondering what's wrong with them. It's just the way a lot of Midwestern people are. Not all Midwestern people, but a lot of Midwestern people.
But mostly this week I'm resting up because tomorrow, after work, starts the great adventure where three different cars from three different locations all move to the one spot just outside Utica, Illinois. Grizzly Jack's Grand Bear Resort. For a weekend of spoiling a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old like crazy. Indoor water park, indoor amusement park. That's pretty much it.
Mm. And like food, do they have like...
There's food, yes. Their main restaurant is a sports bar located in the middle of the amusement park.
Hmm. But is there like amusement park like food? Like
I'm hoping.
Cotton candy.
Churros.
Those dreaded funnel cakes.
Some sort of fried dough, basically. Yeah. No, I'm hoping that's the case.
Mm-hmm.
We will see. I'm guessing it's not going to be good food.
Not my kind of thing, but...
Well, not I'm mine sure. either. I wouldn't exactly take the wife there for a romantic getaway.
Why not? You think you might enjoy water parks. Because you've never been to one, you might think it's awesome.
For a little while.
Oh, okay.
And the thing is, I'm fully... Well, first of all, I think the place is going to be packed. Mm. Second of all, it's going to be packed with children and aggrieved parents.
Aggrieved.
Yes, because they have children running around all hyper wanting to do everything.
Well, if they didn't feed their children a bunch of junk food at the place, that maybe that wouldn't happen.
Well, no, that's the thing. And third, I believe this place is probably banking on the fact that it has an amusement park and a water park, and consequently could not care less about any other amenities involved, like food and accommodations and shit like this. So I don't expect it to be a good hotel, per se, or have good restaurants, per se. Both of which are things I like a lot in my vacations.
Yes, yes, of course.
So I don't... But I think the kid part of me is going to be fun, and I'm scared I'm going to get a band of children.
What do you mean, a band? There's just two kids, right?
No, here's the thing. I've talked before about Splash Pad.
I don't know what that is.
In my wife's hometown, which is where these children still live, there's a thing at their park that's a block from their house called Splash Pad, and it's a cemented area.
Your wife's hometown, which
Chillicothe,
is...
Chillicothe, Illinois.
Oh.
And they have the cemented area that has all of these different things that shoot water in different ways. There's a big silo that's spraying water out, and there's a little arc that has all this water coming out, and there's water fountains shooting out of the ground, and there's a thing that dumps buckets of water on you. And it's on in the summers, and kids love it. And what happens is, kids go there, either they are sent there, or they go there with their parents, because they're too young to be sent there, and the parents sit in the shade nearby and watch them and say, don't climb on that. Don't mess with that. You got 10 more minutes. I go there with my niece and nephew, and I play. I love standing under the bucket and getting wet, and I'm running around, and we're making up weird games, and we step on the little sprayers so that the other ones spray more, you know, and that kind of stuff and the whole thing. And what happens is I become sort of a municipal uncle. Very quickly. Mm. The children latch onto me. The children that in some cases have been left here by themselves. Mm. Children that have no parents playing with them. Mm. Not only am I an anomaly, but I'm a playmate. And they're very excited about this. And so suddenly I had one kid I had never met. To this day, I don't know his name. That at one point said, come here. And we ran over to the side of the thing. And he wanted to go to the other part of the park. He says, watch me climb up and go down that slide. And I was like, I gotta stay
That's
here.
Really sad.
I have a niece and nephew. And at this place, it's possible there will be more playing because it's family vacation. But it's also quite possible that, and pardon the stereotypes here, but I think this is going to be a general thing. Dad is in the sports bar drinking beer. Mom has to deal with all the kids and really just wants to sit on the side and watch them swim. And I'm going to be splashing and freaking out in the middle. So I might end up with a band of children.
And
I don't know what I'll
do. And you're
a
big guy.
I am a big guy.
When now see, kids are really my observation, because you know my father's a big guy, is that kids can respond in one of two ways, and usually respond in both ways in turn. They can be scared to death of a huge person.
Yes.
But then when that person is being playful, they're like freaking out. I mean, they almost get more excited about a big person playing around than someone who would be my size or a shorter person.
Oh yeah, no,
I don't know
hilarious.
What that's about. I mean, it's like
that's the other thing. They all laugh at me when I'm at Splash Pad. They all think I'm the funniest thing ever. And admittedly, I'm pretty damn funny. But from nothing, I'll do nothing, and they're just giggling.
What do you think that is? I mean, Why is that, do you think?
Generally speaking, I would guess, I'm pulling this out of my ass here, but I would guess if they have certain associations with a big person that cause intimidation, things like that, potentially a father figure who's very big and kind of scary, the contrast is surprising.
Kind of
and
the
amusing.
Irony.
The novelty. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Which is sad for us big people, but...
Well, I don't know. I mean...
And that's the thing. Really, if I just jump in the water park and I'm all playing by myself, it would probably be weird. I have a niece and nephew with me who think I'm fun and they're having a good time, too. So kids immediately are like, clearly it's safe. These aren't like decoy children.
Maybe they are.
That if, for that... creepers, that's not a bad plan, actually. Think about it. Get fake children. Say, act like you trust me.
Get in my belly.
Exactly. I ate a baby. But yeah, this will be an interesting experiment. We're just gonna cut loose. We're gonna watch out for their safety.
Good. That's a good.
And we are gonna have a rule. There's a big video arcade. They're not allowed to do that.
Oh, really?
Because not because video games are ruining our children. Because, well, first of all, it's kind of a direct money sink in a big. This whole trip's gonna be pretty expensive. But it's kind of a direct money sink. But the big thing is, both the 6-year-old and the 8-year-old are very competitive and easily frustrated. Those two things do not combine well in a video arcade, especially when you are 6 and 8. So that's going to be sort of off the table. And at some point in this weekend, I'm going to have a talk with them and explain that this is not how it's going to go every time Uncle Tony and Aunt Trish babysit. So we can't afford that. But other than that, pretty much whatever.
Well, you know, their kids' tastes these days change so fast. I mean, it used to be you could count on a kid being excited about something like this from, you know, 5 to 13 almost.
Yeah.
But now, you'll be lucky if a year or two from now they even want to do something like this.
They were very excited about this. Trish thought they might be worried because they do get sort of nervous with new things or whatever. And I was like, it's not going to be a thing. And she asked and they were super psyched. And in fact, recently, the trip that the parents are taking while we're doing this, some stuff was maybe going to fall through on it. And the first thing the 8-year-old says was, if you can't go, can we still go to the water hotel? We were like, yes, yes, you can.
Awesome.
Yeah, so that's the future. I'll be talking about that a lot next week. So look forward to that, people.
The future.
We should probably do some hat things.
Yep. Let's do that.
It's starting to get dark really fucking fast.
Yeah, I know.
I'm kind of surprised.
Why?
It seems like it's happening very quickly.
Some
of that will change, though, when daylight saving switches back, I suppose. But well, especially in the mornings, it's very weird. I get that when I wake up at 5:30, it's dark. But then when I go to shower at 6:30, it's still totally dark.
Yeah, I didn't sleep very well last night. I noticed this morning how dark it was for how long. You know, how long it was dark.
Yes.
I mean, 6:30 rolled around, and it seemed like it was still as dark as it was when it was 5:30. It wasn't, but it seemed like it. Let's see. Dear Homunculi of the Homburg.
Is this from Jazz?
Yeah. She's good at making these things up.
Yeah, pretty much can always tell.
Does Odo on DS9 have a gender?
Oh, this can't have not come up.
Well, I haven't watched... I mean, I know who she's talking about because he's in the early episodes, and I did happen to see early episodes of the show. He's like a shapeshifter or whatever, right?
Yes, yes, yes. Who, spoiler alert, later it turns out is part of the species that founded the Dominion, which ends up being the major antagonist for much of the series.
I see. Well, I think that, you know... Star Trek is really not known for its pushing the boundaries on things like gender binary, heteronormative, whatever. So, you know, I think it's pretty...
Now, to be fair, earlier days they were actually pretty forward-thinking in that just as time and society moved on, they did not.
What do you mean?
Some of the stuff in early series of... of Star Trek The Next Generation and such did some interesting things with sexual preference and sexual or and sexual taste and things like that.
I don't remember that at all.
The genderless society where Riker fell in love with the quote unquote woman.
I don't remember that at all.
Justice had weird stuff involving sex, although none of that particularly got it. You don't remember that? Oh yeah, there was a society where everybody was gender neutral, and then Riker was working with somebody in it, and at one point they confided in him that some people, even though it's not allowed, consider themselves either male or female. And she considered herself female, and they had a romantic thing and all that. And I believe it ended with her getting re-education, and then she had no feelings for him anymore, and he was very sad.
But I don't see how that... That's actually making it seem like gender neutral is bad, and the only way that anyone's going to be gender neutral is if they are brainwashed. That doesn't seem very forward-thinking or progressive in terms of gender when it comes down to it.
Well, okay. Your opinion on the message they used is possibly there, but the fact is they tackled the issue.
Okay, well, the...
And they do have bad bad history with sexual orientation. They actually finally were going to have a gay Star Trek character, and they cut him out completely from I forget which movie.
Well, but, you know, since the very beginning, the original series did this, and from what I could tell, Next Generation sort of also went along these lines. The notion that, you know, men are this way and women are this way, and the whole thing about, you know, women having maternal instincts. I mean, all that stuff, they seem, from the original series all the way through, they seem to be pretty, you know, Voyager even didn't reach out very far from all that stuff. The only time Voyager challenged it was when there was this character who possessed, his spirit possessed other people, and at one point he possessed a female character, and but he had a wife, and so, and he still interacted with her as before.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and DS9 did that some when they had the whatever Dax was,
or whatever. Right,
they had
right.
a few of those, and actually, I think it came out, originally that species showed up on Next Generation, and they had something where somebody encountered an ex of theirs, and now they were in a body that was
right.
opposite,
right.
and the other person was the non whatever they are person couldn't cope with it, but the actual person was like, my feelings are exactly the same.
Well, and
I still maintain, if you compare all of those series to other television series at the time, you will find them at least as progressive as most of them, if not more so.
I get what you're saying there, although... Again,
in a vacuum, you're right. They weren't exactly amazing.
And also, even those... you know, a lot of times what they're doing with those stories is, you know, if they're the same person on the inside, can you still love them? And like, what does that even mean? This whole notion that there's some difference between who you are on the inside versus who you are on the outside, and this ridiculous dichotomy. But whatever. But my general opinion of Star Trek is that if your first impression is that Odo is male, I mean, that's probably intentional. Star Trek was probably not trying to psych you out, thinking, all right, maybe he seems really male, his voice seems male, and you know the actor's male, and you know, he doesn't have a lot of the secondary sex characteristics that you associate with female. Oh, but he's a shapeshifter, so maybe we're trying to psych you out. No. He's male. They want you to think he's male.
Well, I think they could think they want you to think he's neuter. I think that's entirely possible.
Well,
I don't think that's the case here.
And see, this is what I point out that I haven't seen DS9, because it is quite possible that even though I would insist that at the beginning of the show he was just a male character, it's quite possible as the show went on, someone realized, hey, you know what? We could do interesting things with gender here, and we could maybe, you know, psych the viewer out and maybe make them think that he actually doesn't have a sex, much less a gender. But I can't even imagine a Star Trek show even thinking about doing that.
And Odo, I believe, is definitely male. Possibly self-identified. But as I was trying to say before we got into the entire gender politics of Star Trek and how much it clearly is a personal thing stuck in your craw somewhere, he had romantic relationships.
Oh, okay.
In which this kind of shit came up. Longstanding, from the beginning, had a huge thing for Major Kira. And it eventually became an issue. And eventually they finally became a couple for a season or two. There was some really weird stuff. Loxana Troi showed up and really, like, caught her eye. And so there was lots of stuff with flirting with him and the usual, you know, him sort of just trying to rebuff her a la Picard used to do. But then it got into some weird sort of intimacy issues because I forget what it involved, but they ended up stuck somewhere and he couldn't hold his form and it was a very private thing for him to, like, get rid of it, and they shared some things and stuff. And in somewhere in this, because I watched a lot of this, but it was a long time ago, the conversation actually came up. And somebody actually asked if he was male or female. And I believe the answer, he may have either said that he has no particular gender, or he may have expressed one for male. But certain behavioral traits and attitudes tended to, I'm pretty sure he was self-defined male. But I think Star Trek actually discussed it. The major one of his kind that he ever dealt with otherwise was a female actor. They made her face look remarkably similar to his. I don't remember what her body looked like. I don't remember if it was female bodied or not. But they made the face look very similar. I will agree, when I think they put it together, I don't even think they were thinking in these terms at all. But they did eventually address them. And also, with Star Trek's record, unfortunately, the fact that he had romantic relationships exclusively with females also heavily implies he was a male. Because, as I said, Star Trek can't cope with that.
Yeah, and yes.
Which is weird. So many sci-fi, that is one thing.
It is something that bothers me because I don't know.
So many sci-fi series of all sorts have, in the future, there's lots more openly homosexual and bisexual people because it's just a thing and it's fine. And as I think we all hope the direction society's going, and Star Trek just very conspicuously, not at all.
Yeah, it's so weird. And I mean, I feel this way about all speculative fiction, really. I mean, it just seems like when you're writing speculative fiction and you can do basically anything you want, for you to make choices that are anglo-normative and heteronormative and all these things, it just really bothers me because it just seems like it's not very good storytelling.
Well, you do realize, though, it's acculturated, and in most cases, I'd say they're probably not conscious choices.
No, I get that, but that only bothers me more.
Like, I mean, loved...
I'm not holding... When you say they're not conscious, it's not an issue of me thinking ill of the people who are telling the stories.
It's you being mad at society.
Well, of the whole problem.
I really loved in... Was it Mass Effect 2? I don't remember. It came up a few times in Mass Effect. But one that I really liked was there's a guy who's the pilot of your little shuttlecraft. And he's a dude. He's just a guy. And at a certain point it comes up that he lost somebody in the war, because a bunch of people did, and it was his husband.
Mm-hmm.
And it comes up and there's actually a side thing where you can sort of help him, you know, mourn the loss and stuff like that, and it's very nice. And it was... there wasn't even a moment of, oh, you married another man. Like,
no, it was just,
it
like
didn't ever even
accepted like it happened.
It was just that it was there. Yes.
Right.
And there were a couple in Mass Effect 3, some of the side conversations involved similar things. And I love that. I love when we're at the point that goes unnoticed.
Yeah.
I want that to be more of a thing. I really like that.
But see, even in Mass Effect, when I was watching other people in the household play it, I noticed that, like, they were playing the female Shepard or whatever.
Yeah.
And I noticed that, first of all, opportunities to flirt with male characters came up a lot more often.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes you picked an option to, you know, Mass Effect is famous for the, you know, they give you a little choice about what you want to say, and then when you pick it, they end up saying
totally
something
different.
Completely.
Yes.
And so many times it was flirtatious when you didn't know it was going to be.
Yeah.
And more often than with female characters. And then when it was flirtatious, the voice actor, the female voice actor, when she played flirtatious to female characters, which was very rare, it was not the same as when she played flirtatious to male characters.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't find that, and I flirted with everybody.
Oh, yeah. Very different.
What I did notice in the very first game, if you're a female and pursuing a romantic relationship with the other female character with whom you can, there is a moment early on where one of the options is to be incredibly shocked that this woman would want to be with another woman. But I think a lot of it, because while this was going on, all the Dragon Age shit was going on too, and Jade Empire had already happened, but still. I think BioWare's been evolving. BioWare's always kind of been at the forefront of doing this sort of
romantic things
and allowing the homosexual and the bisexual ones. And they took a lot of flack in Dragon Age 2, where there was finally a male-male option, which confused me because there was a male-male option in Jade Empire.
There was a male-male option in the first Dragon
That is Age. True, actually. You're right, because the elf dude was bisexual.
Yeah.
Actually, that's true. I slept with him. I forgot about that when I played the second time. But something in the second one really put several people up in arms. And what it came down to was there were male players playing male characters who felt they had not flirted with this individual and found this individual flirting at them.
Yeah,
and they
right.
thought it was repulsive and disgusting and that they shouldn't have to experience that.
Really?
Yes. And everybody said, excuse me?
That's very strange, I think.
Like, have you not paid attention to every video game ever?
First of all, just a video game.
Yes. And also, you can tell him, apparently, in the second
one,
I'm not interested, and then it stops.
And then he'll back off, exactly. I mean, so...
Yeah, no,
there was really
a huge outcry. And there were some people trying to back it up, saying, well, the majority of people who are buying the video games are young men, and so you... It didn't last very long, and it was pretty much stomped on immediately, because the whole internet said...
I haven't even heard of that.
The fuck? Yeah.
That's really strange.
Yeah. And that was a thing. Like Jade Empire has a male-male romance possibility. I tried to get it. I failed. Because, in order to get it, you basically... There are three possible romantic partners in the game. It's actually kind of similar to how the first Mass Effect was. There's a female who's heterosexual, there's a female who's bisexual, and then there's a male who's bisexual, so it is a little different. If you're a guy, to get with the other guy, you basically have to not talk to the other two women, ever. And eventually he says, I noticed that you don't ever spend any time with them.
Okay, now see, that's what I mean.
And it was a pain, and I didn't realize, I was just having conversations with them, I wasn't flirting or anything, and it never triggered, and I had to look it up.
Why do you think, I mean, that's obviously a choice that's being made, why, I mean, Mass Effect and
Again,
Dragon
I think
Age...
it was the evolution of the process. Back in those days, I think the company was still kind of scared.
Okay, but here's my thought process here. It seems like you have a choice. You can either make all of the, you know, you can either design it so all the romantic options are the same.
Yeah.
Or not. And make some of them, like consciously make some of them harder. Or consciously make some of them easier.
Yes. Oh, why? No, and I do think they consciously did that.
Why?
Again, afraid.
Well, I suppose given the fact that in the second one, this guy was hitting on the male characters and they didn't like it. Maybe that's what they were afraid would happen.
Keep in mind.
And they were right to think that, I guess, but I never heard that.
Jade Empire is pretty old. And going back even further, the video game market was largely dominated by young males. And then after that stopped being the case as much, marketing people still thought that was the case.
It just
it was very slow. And nowadays, and that's the thing, Dragon Age and Dragon Age 2 are a major step up from how it was in Jade Empire. But meanwhile, lesbians are always hot to guys. And so, you could get, if you were a girl, you could get with the one of the female characters. And if you were a male, you could start a romance with one of the female characters, eventually start a romance with the other. They would eventually meet and get angry at you and make you try and pick. And if you picked either of them, you ended up with no one. But if you said you just couldn't decide, you ended up with both of them. So it had a harem ending built in as well. But this was a long time back, and it changed. Way back, before even this, the original KOTOR, technically, it had a couple of romance options that were full-on romance options. They were both heterosexual. But if you were playing a female character, and you were playing Jedi, and you played things a certain way, there was a female NPC that eventually would tell you that she loved you, and you could say that you loved her back. Nobody kissed. There was no romantic activity. In fact, I think this happened just before you never saw them again. But you could actually do that. But it was sort of very deep buried and very mild. There's been an evolution in it, and BioWare's been at the forefront of it. But yeah, it's a slow process. Yeah. I didn't know about that till long after I played KOTOR.
Well, in Jazz's question, has a lot of, as most of her questions do, there's a lot of ways to interpret it. I mean, again, I'm looking at it simply from a production standpoint. I'm very certain that he was originally set up to be male and that was consistent throughout the show. I didn't see the whole show, but I can't imagine Star Trek being brave enough to not maintain that through the whole show, you know, with the exception of maybe a few, you know, a show here and there trying to challenge viewers just a little bit. But there's a broader question here, regardless of what the writers or the producers intended. Because gender is, you know, as we both know, gender is culturally constructed.
Arguably. I don't want to offend all the trans folk out there.
What do you mean?
Some people believe that some people equate gender with sex and consider sex something inbred that is not respective of the body type.
Well, see, that's an interesting thing you're saying.
That's the thing. If we say gender is culturally constructed, which, yes, is my personal belief, then there's no such thing as somebody being born a woman in a man's body. And I don't want to tell somebody that.
Right, but, see, I'm...
Because there are people who believe that's what they are.
Recently, I read an article where, they talked to at least two trans people who, you know, one of them went to a meeting with other women, and they were attacking the gender binary, and they were bothered by this because they'd gone to a lot of trouble to change their sex so that they could fit into this gender, and all these women wanted to chuck the whole gender thing. And another trans person said that if the gender binary didn't exist, they wouldn't have had a reason to get a sex change.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that in both of those cases, the trans people are acknowledging that it's culturally constructed, and they're acknowledging that the culture could change so that it's no longer the way it is.
Well, I don't believe that all trans people feel that way, and I don't believe there is consensus on the issue.
All right, well... I certainly don't mean any offense when I say this, but I mean...
Well, and I mean, yeah, and I try and take it with your own self. I'm also the guy who actually believes that sexual orientation is culturally constructed as well, and I will take a lot of flack for that.
But... Okay, so... Looking at gender as a... Okay, as a cultural phenomena then.
Okay. Or we can say socially constructed gender roles.
All right. The question becomes broader, regardless of what was intended by the creators. They cast a male character, they dressed him as male, they made sure he didn't have any female secondary characteristics, so you wouldn't possibly mistake him for a female.
Yeah.
There was a lot of heteronormous stuff going on, fine. But outside of those things, and in general, show for show, did this seem like a queered character? I mean,
No,
in any way?
No, he was a very... That's the thing. At no point did they mess with the gender perception. At certain points, they acknowledged that it was a perception, potentially, based on the definition of the character. But at no point did they mess with it and say, oh, maybe he's not a guy.
That's not what I mean. What I mean is...
No, but even perceptually, like, at no point, he was very much the crusty old veteran, like, he should have had a beard and everything. Like, he was very, Odo was arguably one of the most male characters on that show, by standard gender types.
Okay. That's what I'm asking.
Yeah, no, they never did. But this brings up an interesting point. We diverged into issues of sexual orientation. Just about nobody really messes with gender in their sci-fi stuff. It's sad. Sometimes you get gender-neutral societies. Sometimes. Even then, frequently they don't do it very well. Nobody ever has given me a humanoid species or a human society with any extra gender roles. Just the other day. I was so psyched about this. I went down a wiki rabbit hole the other day of censorship in films in different countries, and found out that apparently Samoa has major issues with gay people, which is weird because they have a third gender role in their society that even in modern times is very widely accepted, and it's biological males who essentially hold a female role in society, and most commonly when they are involved romantically are involved with men, they marry men. And I found out, not only this has become so prevalent that New Zealand, which apparently has a lot of Samoan immigrants, there's a cartoon show for children they have that's set at the school, and the principal of the school is of this third gender in this kid's cartoon, and I thought that was really awesome. But now I suddenly realize that kind of thing is ripe for use in sci-fi, and I don't remember it ever coming up. Unless we're talking about some weird, incredibly unhuman species, and we're like, oh, they got seven different sexes, and we don't ever see them, we just say that.
Well, of course, the problem here is this whole gender binary problem. I don't want to get into different theories about sex or sexual orientation. I mean, I have my own ideas about those things, but... I think people argue about those things way too much when the fact of the matter is there's absolutely, well, again, maybe I shouldn't say that because you were saying before, that might insult people, but
that's why I tend not to push these, because like I said, I believe in the cultural construct. I also believe it doesn't matter because people can express whatever gender type they want and whatever sexual orientation they want.
Well, here's the thing.
I don't see why it matters.
Let me speak to gender neutrality for a second in that concept. From a sociological standpoint, Carl Couch, who's a sociologist at the University of Iowa, described what he called the romantic relationship, but I don't think he realized how culturally laden that concept was, and so I've sort of changed it to the amorous relationship. And this is a sociological relationship that you can find in all cultures and all people that mostly involves intimate relationships between people. And when I say intimate, I don't necessarily mean sexual. But just intimate and not fleeting intimate either. I mean, it's a long-term type of thing, it's planned to be long-term anyway. But it doesn't have to be just between two people. It doesn't have to be monogamous. It doesn't, it's very narrowly defined. But when it comes to relationships in sociology, you know, amorous relationships, exchange relationships, parental relationships, Carl Couch isolated 9 different discrete relationships that human beings engage in. Each one of these relationships has, you know, roles. Like the parental relationship, you have the parent and the child. In an exchange relationship, you have the buyer and the seller. And these, since these relationships are universal and they're sort of, they're like language, they're sort of encoded into, you're not taught them, you just sort of know them as you're being socialized and growing up. These roles become almost like archetypes. And in the amorous relationship, obviously, you know, it's not like parent or child or buyer or seller. I mean, there's lover and lover, basically. And however that's defined isn't important, but what these roles are called in sociology are categorical identities. Now, in sociology, categorical identities can apply to a lot of things. You know, male, female,
I sense this son, suddenly daughter, having whatever. Jumped into a new order of magnitude, and I should tell you we're already over an hour. Now, so cut to the chase.
I'm going to try to right now. But these particular kinds of categorical identities that belong to these relationships function in a very specific way. They only apply to the given relationship, and they only apply at the beginning. So in an amorous relationship, what these categorical identities define is, you know, the kind of person you want to have an amorous relationship with. So that helps you find that person, and that helps initiate the relationship, but then you can forget about it. And what I mean by that is, if you're a gay man, okay, so that's your categorical identity, and you're looking for another gay man, and that's their categorical identity. It, at the beginning of the relationship, that helps you get it started. But from that point forward, you can forget about that, and you don't have to treat this gay man like every other gay man you've ever known. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you can also let the relationship evolve and change in whatever you want. If this is now, this is the only sense, sociologically speaking, that I can think of that gender exists or operates. But if this is how we define gender, it means there's no such thing as gender neutrality, but there is such a thing as there's probably a different gender for as many people as exist. Mm-hmm. And that's a concept that a lot of people just don't really seem to get. And a lot of science fiction has a chance to really sort of explore this, yeah. But they won't do it.
Well, and gender issue is behind the issue of sexual orientation at this point. Everybody understands about gay people now, mostly. You know, and even bisexuals, although that's a little behind the thing. People are just now getting the concept of transgenderism in a very straightforward transsexual way. It's going to be a long time, assuming we can do it, because we also would love to be binary about things. It's going to be a long time before we can get actually... this is an infinite spectrum of possibilities.
Well, yeah, because... It, you know, orientation is just a really small piece of it. Yeah. I mean,
well, and I have to be really careful who I'm around that I say I'm transgender, because people make a lot of assumptions by that. And transgender is the most broad term for it I can think of, because all the other more specific terms I don't fit into.
Right.
So if I say transgender, I then have to explain for an hour what I'm talking about. And I don't need to. Frequently, the way I get around it is I say I have gender dysphoric issues, if I want to just gloss over it and move on. If I actually say I'm transgender, because I know people put things in their head with that, I immediately have to be like, okay, now I have to explain to you what that means to me specifically, right. Because there's so much attached to it. Little fun fact, Carl Couch went on to found Match.com.
No.
I keep wanting to say Barty Crouch from Harry Potter.
No.
By the way, a note to people out there, stop making all these goddamn young adult books where it turns out that people are secretly wizards or superheroes or angels or something, because creepers are going to start using it. They're going to start approaching children and being like, guess what? You're a wizard, and I'm here to take you away from it, and it's in that van. and it's going to be a terrible thing, and so we should all stop making those books. Also, they're just starting to annoy me.
Okay. That was a little strange.
Yes, sorry. I went down a different wiki rabbit hole today. Anyway, if you would like to comment on whatever that stuff William said, I wasn't listening, go to the blog, and also go to the blog and read what Jazz has to say about it, because Jazz is going to have a lot to say about it, I'll tell you right now. And potentially lots of other listeners and hard hats and wonderful people all around. The blog is at themagicaltalkinghat.com. Also, write the hat, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Remember, your name will not be attached to your question unless you specifically put it in the body of the email or you are Mark. Otherwise, even if there's an automated signature or you put something in the subject line, gonna assume it's meant to be anonymous unless it is put in the body of the email. That also, however, means you can sign it however you want. So, if your email says johnsmith@yahoo.com, you can still sign it Cyndi Lauper if you want.
Or Mark.
Or Mark. That'll get a little meta, but still. I was thinking calling this episode Gender Roles, R-O-L-L-S, because I always just think that's a funny thing to say. But I don't know. I'm pretty sure I know what I have to call this episode.
What's that?
Earthworms!
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.